So's the Queen.
She's old.
The Queen is a listener.
Yeah, the Queen of England is definitely listening to this.
Shh.
What are you afraid of?
I'm an American. You can't touch me.
Yeah. Our ancestors.
Freedom of the press, fools.
The American Revolution, so that we can say the Queen is scary looking. All right, well, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast, where we are here to explore. What?
We're going global. Is awesome.
Yeah. We are, yes. Yeah. Look out, UK.
Welcome to the podcast, royal family. We know you're
listening. About to get into that.
Yep. Prince Harry, Meghan Markle,
William, Kate,
and eight.
James.
No, not eight. There's three.
Who is it? John and Kate.
That's John and Kate plus eight.
Yeah, they're no longer together.
Nope.
Oh, that's sad.
I know.
How are their eight kids?
Good.
Probably traumatized. That's probably what I would imagine.
I still watch the show because now it's.
Wait, it's still
Kate.
A show?
It's just Kate plus eight.
What? Why did John get kicked off?
That's a whole nother.
Was John unfaithful? Did he kind of screw up?
Maybe.
Okay.
Well, tune into our other podcast, all about celebrity gossip. It's called Beyond Kate.
Plus eight.
Yes. All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast.
I just broke my pen.
Man, we are all kinds of recording today.
Firing on all cylinders here.
We are exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning.
All right, that's what we're here for. Yes. Now I remember. Okay.
This is Patrick Nazaroff, and with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
Yeah, how are you doing? And Katie Phillips.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Katie. All right. We have a special new format to our podcast today.
Dun, 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 dun.
Ooh, it's exciting. Instead of one big topic, we're actually going to take a look at three small topics. I have three pieces of news that we are going to take a look at and kind of see how they can connect and relate to.
We should come up with a clever name for that. But for now, we're just going to do it as is.
We'll call it maybe a podcast potluck.
Ooh. Podcast potluck.
I like it.
Podcast potluck, yes. All right, but before we get there, we have some news to go over.
I feel a little bad that I didn't bring anything to this potluck.
Yeah, I usually don't. I'm kind of a selfish person.
Oh, well, good.
Most potlucks I've been to, I'm just kind of there to...
You brought all the articles today. So
that is
kind of
true.
Atoning for your sins in all the potlucks to which you have not brought anything.
All right, before we get there.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Peppa Pig?
Unfortunately.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Well, American parents are saying their children are now speaking in a British accent after watching too much Peppa Pig.
And I say that's the parents' fault. If your child is watching too much Peppa Pig, you are in control of that situation.
I don't know much about Peppa Pig, but I assume she?
Yep.
Okay. Peppa is a girl.
Peppa's the little girl.
Peppa
is a pig.
And is a pig.
Speaks
pig family.
In a British accent.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a British show.
So the whole family
does.
So there's Daddy Pig, Mommy Pig, Peppa Pig, and George. George, her brother.
And who? Okay, George is...
Peppa's George, little brother.
George Pig and Peppa Pig. Peppa Pig flows a little bit better.
Yeah, well, she's the main character.
I mean, I could sing you the song, but I'm not gonna...
Go right ahead.
Yeah, nope. Katie, this nope. is...
No, you know what I think
we're
is
not
interesting,
moving on
too?
Until
not
you sing
just
a song.
The, not just the accent, but children are also using different words. For example... They call a shopping cart, like that you get at the grocery store.
Yeah.
They call it a trolley. So I actually know somebody whose son started calling shopping carts trolleys.
That's ridiculous.
Just from watching Peppa Pig. Like, that's not a shopping cart. That's a trolley.
Yeah.
What?
Don't say, that's a weird word. Yeah. Are they calling elevators lifts?
Probably.
Yeah.
I don't know how often Peppa Pig rides an elevator.
Yeah, I don't think that's on there much.
Yes. Are they calling what do they call fries? Chips?
I don't know.
I'm asking. You said they were doing different names.
Yeah,
chips
but
are
I,
crisps.
That's
oh, crisps are potato chips.
Crisps are potato chips.
Right.
And cookies are biscuits.
Right, which is ridiculous.
And they're also, I've had some British
cookies
and they're also terrible. They're not even good. So.
Maybe that's because you're eating British cookies and not British biscuits. Maybe you're eating the wrong thing.
No, they're biscuits and they're bad.
They're like what we call biscuits?
No. But we call cookies, they would call a biscuit.
Oh.
Yeah. Yes. It's a right proper biscuit.
All right.
I watch The Great British Bake Off, and there are some...
Kat likes that. My wife
yeah,
likes
there are some phrases that I pick up from that, but mostly out of, like, humor. I don't use it in my everyday conversation. Yeah,
they're very sweet. It's an incredibly sweet show.
Yeah, it's so different than, like, American competition shows.
I know. They want to help each other.
Right. But they do
When they lose, they're cool with it.
Yeah.
They do the crossover at Christmas time with the American Christmas baking...
Ooh, I missed this.
...under the tent. Yeah.
They did an American Bake Off in the
so
tent?
So it's Americans baking, but there are British people who come judge them.
That's
so I guess it's like...
That seems unfair.
Mm-hmm. So it's very... I love... That got me... I didn't even know there was a British baking show until Under the Tent.
A great British baking show.
That. Yeah. Until the holidays when they came to America and did the Great American holiday baking show or something like that.
So there you go. If you want to expose your kids to British culture, have them watch Peppa Pig. This one dad is saying, she's also snorting like a piggy. So there you go.
Yeah. I mean, that just reminds me of A Christmas Story.
There you go. I can't put my arms down.
So good. Speaking of the holidays.
What holidays are we speaking of?
When is this episode coming out?
Not at Christmas.
Not near any holidays. Okay.
All right.
So what's in our potluck today, Patrick? Ooh, what do you got for us?
Okay, we have three different articles here.
Let's start with the first course. We'll call this the salad course.
The appetizer?
Ooh, the appetizer, yeah.
Appetizer, okay.
Appetizer slash salad.
Here we go. This one seems like a good appetizer. I think it has the least amount of news attached to it. So there's an article called Convicted for Taking Water to Thirsty People.
The story might surprise you.
The story might surprise you. Yes.
Sorry.
The No More Deaths Volunteers.
The No More Deaths Volunteers?
No More Deaths. It's the name of an organization.
All right. So No More Deaths is an organization, and they have volunteers.
Yes.
Deaths, not debt.
Deaths.
Deaths.
As in no more people who die.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Go ahead.
This is just introduction.
It's hard. Sometimes it's hard.
Okay. You know. All right. The No More Deaths organization.
Uh-huh.
They are an interfaith humanitarian group.
Okay.
And they go to places that they in America that they think migrants are crossing the border mm-hmm. to leave food, clothing, water at these kind of border crossing locations.
Okay.
And now some of their members are being incarcerated.
Arrested. Okay.
Incarcerated. They're going to jail.
Yeah, I'm not arguing with you. I'm just clarifying that's what we're talking about.
Yes. They're being arrested and prosecuted and going to jail for their crimes.
What are they being... what's the crime that they're being accused
of? The crime is not leaving these things. The crime is they are leaving these things in wildlife refuges and dedicated space where litter and trash are not allowed. So they're going and leaving homemade, man-made goods and plastic bottles, containers there. And that is against the law and the rules.
Because it's
litter. A wildlife refuge. Right. It's for all, regardless of if someone else can use the litter, they're arrested for litter. An abandonment of property.
Right, okay.
Yes. And so, No More Deaths organization is obviously against being arrested. So they're kind of campaigning against we should not be arrested and prosecuted for these things, for violating American law. And so this kind of probably leads to some interesting questions, right, for the church. What one matters more, the humanitarian efforts or following the rules and laws of the United States? And these things are kind of coming into conflict.
Yeah. Mm.
And so what do we as Christians think? How can we best handle or best approach these things?
Well, my initial thought would be you don't have a leg to stand on if you are knowingly violating a law.
Yes.
Yeah. To say, that law shouldn't apply to me. I have no argument that you have the right as a Christian to stand on conviction and to potentially break the law. I mean, that's what happened in the civil rights movement, right? People had to knowingly break the law to draw attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
But they also were willing to face consequences for that. You can't expect to do that and not potentially face consequences.
Are there not other areas along the border that are not sanctuary?
That's where people are crossing, though. Leaving it where people could access it and use it. And so there are plenty of other places.
Right.
But that's not where
you could leave that in your backyard and nobody would get it. So, I do think this is an interesting place because I do think that in reality, I support what they're doing. I think it's important. I don't want people who are crossing and I think regardless of how you feel about immigration, we don't want people starving to death in the middle of the desert. I think that's a terrible way to die, and that's not something we would wish on any person, regardless of intent. I don't want that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do respect what they're doing, but I also think in this situation, similar to the civil rights situation, this organization should be willingly accepting the punishment of what they're doing. That they really need to say, we're breaking the rules. And maybe even potentially I would recommend turning yourself in and say, we did these things and we're turning ourselves and we're throwing ourselves in the court. Because that way, it's not just we're providing food and sanctuary, we're drawing attention to this place.
Yeah, I think that's a more meaningful form. Yeah,
and also getting some of these rules overturned instead of they just should not apply to us because we're good people.
Right.
I don't think that's a way that Christians should approach the laws of the land. Even if they are unjust, we should be willingly to submit to them.
Right. I mean, it's the same concept that you know, when, I don't know what your all's experience was, but when I was in college and people who were knowingly, you know, finding alcohol under 21 and saying, well, the law is stupid. I can vote, but I can't drink. Well, the fact that the law is stupid doesn't mean that it doesn't apply to you.
Yeah.
Right. Like you have to be willing to face those consequences. That's the way the law works. And if you want to draw attention to that, you have the right and authority to do that, but you have to understand that there are going to be consequences along the way because we live in a world in which our actions have consequences, even the good ones.
Yeah.
And there are plenty of ways in which people do the right thing and face unfortunate consequences for those. I mean,
Yeah.
So I definitely think we're pretty much on the same page on this one. Kind of, we support their actions. I think it's a good thing that they're doing this. I think it's good for migrants and those that are even illegal immigrating. I think this is a positive thing for these people. And yet there are rules and laws in place. And for those of us, it's okay to be a Christian and be concerned about the wildlife in that area and not wanting them to ingest plastic and man-made goods that are left behind.
Right.
So.
And I would also say, like, it's okay for us as Christians to say, it's okay to provide resources to prevent people from dying and also be opposed to illegal immigration.
For sure.
You can be on both of those things. Because just being opposed to illegal immigration is not stopping these people from dying in the desert in high numbers.
Right.
All right, so let's move on. Our appetizer.
That was delicious.
Is this the main course then?
This is the main course. This one I have the most news on because it's based on
what's
some
your
research.
Favorite potluck main course? Growing up for me, it was always whoever brought the KFC because we never had KFC as a family. So it was like whoever brought KFC. It was like, you are my best friend.
And I like those people too. Awesome. I identify with them because they're like, oh, it's the potluck.
Right.
We'll just hit KFC on the way to church.
I respect your...
We'll buy a bucket of chicken. We did not make anything. Yep. There are no casseroles here. Yep. And honestly, like, I think casseroles are awesome. That's something I'm super into as a human being.
Oh, that's too bad. There are some really delicious casseroles out in the world there, Patrick.
I'm not saying there are or aren't. It just, I think... I've been to plenty of church potlucks where you've looked at a casserole and you definitely can say, these are the things they had in their fridge.
Mm-hmm.
And they threw them in a pot.
That's true. There
I say that. any non boxed macaroni and cheese in which that was baked is pretty awesome.
A baked macaroni and cheese.
Sure. Yeah. You can never go wrong with a mac and cheese. I agree with you on that.
Yes. I mean, I still, you know, eat boxed mac and cheese. I'm not above that.
No,
but,
no judgment.
For sure.
Give me that powder.
Man, I had boxed macaroni and cheese for the first time in a long time because Sophia wanted it the other day. This is like a couple weeks ago. And I took like one bite of that and like my childhood came back to me. I was like, oh man, I'm going to eat this entire
box.
Did
you have some hot dogs to cut up and put in it? Because we did that.
Yeah.
Classy.
Pretty classy.
One pot deal before pot meals were a thing.
Yep.
All right, here we go. Our main course.
Our main course.
It's our KFC.
Our macaroni, cheese, and hot dogs.
Our macaroni, cheese, and hot dogs.
And KFC. It's piled high on the plate.
This is an article titled, Who Are the Most Alienated Americans?
Aliens.
The answer will surprise you.
Aliens.
Yes. From the article, there's no doubt about it. America has a loneliness epidemic.
Okay.
Millions of Americans suffer from strong feelings of alienation, and that number only seems to be increasing. So who are the most lonely amongst us?
What do you think? Do you want to know what I originally think?
Yeah, what do you think? Okay, let's get your opinion.
I would think teenagers.
Teenagers. Okay.
Interesting.
And I think that's simply because of social media.
Yeah.
I think that's a...
No real connection other than with a screen.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a strong argument, but I'm guessing that if we're looking for a category of people who define themselves as more lonely, we're looking at younger adults who are moving further away from home, which would be millennials.
Yeah.
So people who are losing their connection to go and search for whatever, but are ending up in cities or places where they don't have any sort of... Because even a teenager, like, they might feel at home, but they're still living... Or feel alone, but they're still living in a house with people for the most part. So I think it's going to be millennials, personally.
Good guess. Both wrong.
Oh!
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, we'll actually get back to that, because I think there's some truth to both of the things you've said. But
well, we absolutely said things that are true. They just happen to not be
the
most...
number one.
Well, according to this
U.S. Am I even on the list?
Yeah, according to the U.S. Census, baby boomers are aging alone more than any other generation in history. They are finding the most loneliness.
Hold on.
They're aging alone does not necessarily mean that they feel like they are alone.
Okay.
You know, like, because they could be living in places where they have... Like, just because you are living alone doesn't mean you are...
They have the highest rate of people who feel loneliness.
Okay.
And I think part of that is due to aging alone.
Due to aging alone. Okay. All right. So aging alone is more like a causal relationship.
That typically baby boomers are more likely than their previous generation, the elder generation, to be divorced, to be living alone or unmarried compared to other generations. So,
sure, so baby boomers.
Yeah, so baby boomers. About 8.3 out of 100 feel isolated and alienated.
Oh, wow.
So they have the largest rate of that.
All right. Sorry, babies. Baby boomers. Babies. Sorry, boom.
Those are my parents' age.
Yeah. Aw.
Well, 1 in 6 of them live alone. And so that's probably a pretty big reason, because of divorce or unmarried. Mm. That was probably, baby boomers was more of the divorced generation. That's where divorce really took prevalence in America, sure. through their generation. but though, according to another study, though baby boomers do experience loneliness, the data found that young adults 18 to 22 are also the loneliest generation in America. So this is a different study, and they came to a different conclusion, that young adults, and they say more than half of young adults are saying that they can feel left out, isolated, or without anyone to talk to.
And I would agree with Katie's previous assessment that that has a lot to do with social media and technology, that we, in many ways, have lost skills in personal communication and interpersonal communication because we rely so heavily on it. I mean, I don't know what your all's experiences with this, but you know, I have a lot of friends who, even in college, were like, "Why would somebody ever call me on the phone?
Yeah,
I don't want to have to talk. Like, just text me." And it's like, and I don't get that personally. Like, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I just, I don't understand it, and I don't understand where that particular fear or anxiety comes from.
Yeah, I don't like talking on the phone. So
I
think that's probably because. I'm certainly a more introverted human being, and I also, I think, have, like, in a face-to-face conversation, it's easier for me to pick up on social cues that I do not get over the phone, so that makes that a more anxious conversation to me. So maybe that's some social anxiety.
Yeah, that could be.
I like to talk on the phone.
I believe it. You could have ended that statement after the word
I do
talk.
That. I do that. I do that, like, in my car, you know, since I drive 45 minutes. To work, I am usually on the phone with my mother-in-law on the way to work, or my dad, or my sisters, or somebody. I'm talking to someone.
Well, I like my family a lot. I do not want to talk to them for 45 minutes a day, two ways. Like that. No, thank you.
No, me neither.
I do.
I do love my family a lot, but...
There are some days that I just turn on podcast and I'm like, let's hear what Beyond Sunday has to say to me today.
I bet that's some good things.
They are. They're really good.
Sometimes not.
I hear Katie Phillips has got great things to say.
Yeah, probably though in our office, even though I definitely will be self-identify as an introvert, I think I'm probably the most social in the office. Like I'm usually bouncing around between people's offices to talk to people.
You are, for sure.
Yeah, so. Because I like family, not strangers. I see you as family.
I mean, stranger danger. I mean,
don't like strangers. Like, yeah, whatever.
What does that mean? To like open up to.
Yeah, having a conversation. I hate small talk, and I hate like talking to a stranger about about small talk. So, but I enjoy deep conversations with people I know and trust. All right, well, younger generations. I think that all these things can be a part of that. I think this social media gives us a false sense of community and friends. Mm-hmm. That if it's a friendless number can matter to us, then outside of deeper relationships connecting with one another, I think that can definitely lead us into pitfalls. I read a study, which we don't have as part of our potluck, that said if spending more than 10 minutes a day on a specific social media type will increase depression, loneliness, anxiety.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. 10 minutes is okay, but anything more than that, it increases those things. So,
even in people who would not otherwise call themselves depressed or anxious?
Yeah. That could be a barometer that. And so a good limit is limiting yourself to 10 minutes on Instagram, 10 minutes on Facebook, 10 minutes on Twitter, and then moving on. Yeah.
You get 10 minutes on each, or do you get 10 minutes total?
10 minutes on each.
Oh. Well, then you get like 30. You play your cards right, you get like an hour out of that.
Yeah.
Well, what are you on? Are there that many things?
Oh, I'm sure there are.
Well, there's Snapchat, Twitter.
Yeah, Snapchat, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn.
LinkedIn? The professional side. Do people still use that?
It's very professional.
Well, I know. That's why I'm not on it. Clearly.
Facebook, Instagram. I mean, that's six right there. That's an hour.
Yeah.
What?
MySpace.
Okay. MySpace. Yeah. Oh,
get your MySpace. Get your top eight going.
Is that even like still a website? I wonder.
I think bands use it. I think like local bands use it more. It's a good way to get their information.
Like I wonder if I remember my sign-in.
To the eight people who are still using MySpace.
to Tom.
first. Yes, Tom was your friend. He was your first friend.
Tom is the creator of MySpace. Yeah. When you signed up for MySpace, he was always your friend.
Yes. Oh, that's very nice of Tom.
Mm-hmm. I never used MySpace.
Okay. Now, here's a question, because we're going to go further deeper in here. Which gender is lonelier, men or women? Which would you think?
Men.
I would tend to agree with Katie, but I'm wondering if women are more likely to admit to being lonely.
So women typically, across the board, report higher levels of loneliness than men do. So that doesn't necessarily mean that they are experiencing higher levels of loneliness, but they're willing to share higher levels of loneliness.
And when they express loneliness, they share it at a higher, so like a woman and a man might be feeling the same experience, but a woman might report that in a different way than a man.
Well, and I wonder too, like, as a woman, specifically as a mother, I never feel alone, but that's not loneliness. 30 seconds. Like, I think being able to distinguish between those two things, like having people with me all the time is not the same as not feeling lonely.
Because there are plenty of people who have your same experience and yet feel alone.
Right, yeah. I getcha.
Yeah, and I think that comes too from men, it's easy... Maybe not easier, but easier for men to accept a lifestyle where they're kind of more alone than maybe sometimes women. They have a different expectation of what life is supposed to look like.
Culturally, for sure.
Culturally, that they're supposed to be more social, more active, more talkative, and men are typically more accepting of a lifestyle where I'm supposed to be alone and understand that.
Yeah, I've heard from...
that's sad, really.
I've heard from female friends who are in their mid to late 20s who are like, oh, they're not dating anyone, and they start to get the questions of like... Well, who are you dating? Are you ever going to get married? And they're like in their mid to late 20s. And like, you know, you see a single guy in his 40s and nobody's blinking an eye at him. It's just a different cultural experience. Huh.
Well, the one caveat here, the one difference is actually in singleness. That's where it's flipped. Single men experience loneliness more than single women.
Hmm. All the single ladies.
Yes.
All the single ladies.
And I guess that's interesting. I guess maybe men, you know, different than traditional understanding of marriage. Maybe they just find greater fulfillment in having... a spouse.
Yeah.
And maybe so. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe, I don't know. I'm not
sure.
But
so women who are married or in a relationship are more lonely than men.
That is true.
But men who are not in a relationship are more
lonely than
single women.
Yes. Single men express loneliness.
I agree with
that.
So a
marriage
true.
Does not make women feel fulfilled.
Right.
That is correct.
If I'm understanding that. Yeah.
It does not take away loneliness.
Right. In the same way that it seems to in some relations. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, I mean, this is certainly correlation. This is not a causation situation, but...
I also think, and I mean, for guys it might be the same. I don't know. I'm not a man. But for females, like, the camaraderie we have amongst each other, like, when you have a whole group of females who are friends together and what, I mean, like, it's super awesome.
Yeah.
I think there's just a deep emotional connection that women have together. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if men share that same experience when they're with other dudes, like hanging out, doing...
Kind of according to the study, men can get...
boy things. I don't know.
Men can get more fulfillment out of, like, acquaintance relationships, while a woman needs a deeper relationship to get fulfillment of. And I guess I experienced that. Sometimes, like, I'll hang out with a friend, and I'll come up to my wife, and she'll be like, all right, what are they up to? I'm like, well, I don't really know.
Right.
I'm like, what are they doing? I'm like, I don't know.
Like, what did you do for the last 3 hours?
We just hung out. We played basketball. Or, you know, that's what we did. And, like, what did you talk about?
We didn't. We were
basketball. Yeah, right. We talked about what we did. Yeah. Right. Yeah, and so I think that's probably part of it too. Like that men can get by on less.
Right.
In terms of relationship, and I think that there's some truth there. All right. So the author of Alienated America will say part of this rise of alienation and loneliness is coming because of the erosion of institutions in America. And these would be, according to this author, religion, marriage, community. So what do we think? The erosion of these things can lead to the rise of loneliness.
Yeah, I mean, that's a sense of belonging.
Yeah.
Right there.
I think community for sure. I would want to hear more about what this author has to say about the correlation between an erosion of religion and marriage and the correlation with loneliness. I mean, I think that's an easy line to draw, but I would like to see what evidence they have to support that claim.
Sure. Well, I imagine, and I have not read his book, Alienated America, but I imagine religion and community went hand to hand in America for a significant amount of time. So your religious community was your community. And so the decline of religion is the decline of community.
Right.
So you're not actively engaged in church. It is maybe sometimes harder to find, like, who are the groups of people that you're serving alongside? Who are the groups of people that you're living life with? Maybe church was a natural place to find those things.
Yeah.
And now it's becoming more of a struggle to find those things. Now you're having to find common interest.
I think my wondering, and I don't have any evidence to back this up, but my wondering would be, I would guess that there have been plenty of lonely people in the church for decades.
I would imagine so.
And I don't think just that we've seen a decline in the religion or in the religiosity of the United States is the only thing that factors into the fact that we're now understanding loneliness within American popular culture.
Yeah. Well, I think they're, again, it's a correlation, maybe causation. Yeah. That these things, as marriage, religion, and community are less prevalent in our lives, loneliness is kind of raising up. And maybe these things were causing a damper on those.
Or maybe way back when religion and community were, high and everything was great, that maybe people weren't talking about how lonely they were back then. Sure. And now people are talking about how lonely they are.
Maybe. Yeah.
Who knows?
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
So I got to be honest, as for a main course, that kind of felt like I just got stuck with the wing. I didn't get the full chicken breast or the full...
Are you feeling lonely? The
thigh. Drumstick
thigh. Yeah.
Are you feeling lonely?
I'm not feeling lonely. I just was less than fully satisfied.
I feel the need to go get you a bucket of KFC.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Dude, feel free. By all means.
All right. Well, here's a dessert. Dessert can make up
for cheesecake
for any bad meal that you've ever had.
Potluck cheesecake is tenuous.
Oh, I forgot this is potluck.
Right. I'm not sure.
So, what is your potluck dessert of choice? What are you hoping is there?
Brownie.
Brownies are always safe. You can leave a brownie out all day, and it's still good.
Well, it might be a little crunchy around the edges.
Okay. The crispy bits on the edges are some of the best parts of brownie.
I mean, the ones that are intentionally there. The ones that it's been cut open, it's been sitting for 4 hours, and so it's
gotten hard on the...
I agree, you can't go wrong with brownie. Brownie's pretty good.
Brownie's a safe bet.
Also, a pudding is pretty good, because it's... I'm fine with people bringing out a pudding.
Depends on the pudding. I'm not a fan of Jell-O.
I didn't say Jell-O, I said pudding.
I know.
Okay. So that's like saying...
I know you don't like steak, but have this piece of chicken.
Yeah. That's not the same thing.
Well, okay, go ahead.
So were Jell-O salads a thing here in Texas growing up?
Yes.
There are huge Midwestern. We don't need to go off on a tangent about this, but man, we had some crazy. Amanda's grandmother, my wife's grandmother, is famous for just crazy stuff in Jell-O salads, like vegetables and things that do not belong in Jell-O salads. Yeah.
Nothing really belongs.
Does Amanda's grandmother listen to the podcast?
I doubt it. I don't think Amanda's grandmother knows what a podcast is.
We don't want to alienate the important spouse's grandmother demographic.
Grandma Russell, if you're listening, I'm sorry, and I've always loved your Jell-O salads.
That's a big component of our listenership.
Right. I'm saying is that I hope that Patrick's last article is not a Jell-O salad for dessert. I hope we get a brownie and not a Jell-O salad.
All right, the article is called...
Or pudding.
James McDonald.
Not to be confused with Jell-O.
Right.
James McDonald and the end of the celebrity pastor.
Ooh.
Do you know who James McDonald is?
No.
He's the end of the celebrity pastor. Was he the last guy on the celebrity pastor reality show that I'm sure exists somewhere?
He is.
This is TBN's breaking into the reality world.
It's like Survivor.
Celebrity pastor.
They're the last man standing.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah, Joel's on there.
Yeah.
Rob Bell, I'm sure he's a celebrity.
Who's that comedian? John Christ, I think, because it always almost looks like Christ, but it's not.
Funny.
He did a.
He could be the host of that.
He did a.
That would be so fun. We should do.
We should get all the celebrity pastors on an island.
Yes.
And then leave.
Anyway,
that's a genius
idea.
He
did a bit about a celebrity pastor fantasy league draft, and instead of drafting your fantasy football team, you were drafting fantasy pastors based on like their how long their sermons were and what size their congregation was. Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. All right, well, James McDonald has been a recently fired senior pastor and founder of Harvest Bible Church.
Oh,
where is Harvest Bible Church?
Chicago.
Okay. Mm.
All right. So he is, this is one of the first, what we would call, I guess, a megachurch mm-hmm. in America. For a megachurch to be a megachurch, do you know how many people it's supposed to have?
Over 5,000, I think.
2,000.
2,000.
Okay. 2,000 is a megachurch. So. Oh. So he is a founder of one of our first ones, and he has recently been fired over, he was making vulgar remarks on a talk show in Chicago, and some inappropriateness has been kind of dealt with in the congregation as a while. That his people investigating it did not do a very good job of, like mm-hmm. they do.
Right.
And then mm-hmm. and then it became more exposed, and now he's fired.
Right.
And
for,
so...
Or for additional references, see our Church 2 series.
See our Church 2 series. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is not a, this is not the first time this has happened. It will not be the last.
Yeah.
So this, I think this rise of mega churches and the rise of maybe podcasting has probably played a role in this before that. TV pastors played a role mm-hmm. in this, mm-hmm. has arisen something called a celebrity pastor.
Sure.
So what would you, how would you define that phrase, a celebrity pastor?
I mean, I would say that any pastor who is known outside of their own congregation mm-hmm. has some element of celebrity to them.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I mean, because if I walk around the Woodlands, like even if I walk around my neighborhood, unless I'm wearing my collar, people don't know that I'm a pastor.
Yeah. Right.
Unless they've like talked to me and like know who I am. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but if Joel Osteen was walking down our street, Everybody on the street would be know who that is.
Yeah.
Even people who are not religious would know who he is.
Right.
Yeah, I think this article is kind of defining them a little bit more of like how they become like a brand in and of themselves.
Sure.
So they're promoting a brand. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an interesting idea that this can be a thing in Christendom is a celebrity church brand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I think this is calling hopefully for an end of a church brand. Because the thing about a celebrity pastor, here's what the article says, a celebrity pastor is a brand, and a brand does not take action against itself. So if Nike is not coming out to expose Nike secrets mm-hmm. or to punish Nike or to rein in Nike, mm-hmm. they're only there to advance the brand.
Right.
That's what it exists for. Mm-hmm. And so when a celebrity pastor our church becomes a brand in of itself, it only exists to advance the brand.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so the brand can't control or rein itself in.
Right.
And I think this is an important thing that I think now we're seeing the rise of the megachurch. Now I think all across America we're seeing the falls of the megachurch. Because mm-hmm. many of these people, even if they're if they don't engage in impropriety or things that are clearly wrong, they just don't know what to do when the brand pastor leaves.
Right.
They don't know how to cope or come back against that. Mm-hmm. And so the church rises, the church becomes a brand, the pastor leaves either fired or retires, and the church itself is kind of left in confusion mm-hmm. because everything was about the church or about this brand that they were producing. So I think this – why do you think this happens? Why do churches – become easily this idea of like, I like this brand of Christianity.
I think it centers around cults of personality.
Yeah.
I think that there are, you know, if you look at the pastors, male and female, who attract a particular type of, and have a particular type of personality that mm-hmm. lends themselves to people saying, I can feel connected to this person, even though I don't actually have any connection to them. I can, sometimes I can feel like this person is speaking truth into my mm-hmm. life. They have that ability. Sometimes it's just whatever, but it's that idea that like this one personality attracts me, and so I want to follow that. And so we follow that personality rather than following mm-hmm. The personality of mm-hmm. Jesus.
Yeah.
And that's not to say, there are plenty of celebrity pastors who are doing excellent work but there are plenty who are doing questionable work on that as well.
Yeah, I think just because they're a popular podcast does not necessarily equal they're bad for Christianity.
I hope not. Because when Beyond Sunday explodes, we don't want
to
be bad.
We finally get Amanda's grandmother to listen.
Yep. That's when we know we've made it. Yes.
Yeah. Or they're a popular author. That's not necessarily automatically equal bad for Christianity. So I don't think that that's the case. But I do think that there is something there. Katie, you were about to say something.
I was just thinking how it's interesting, having been in a congregation, you know, for many years. And then you have pastors that get calls and they leave and they go to another church and then we call a new pastor and whatnot. Nobody is leaving the church, like leaving our building and going with this pastor to this other location to follow them. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that really had to add to.
No, I think
though,
it has a tremendous amount.
I think it's
an
important thing to see. Like, I mean, are we following just one person, or like what? Why?
There are real advantages and disadvantages to having systems and organizations in place. Like,
right.
we have a larger denominational body that we call the Evangelical right. Lutheran Church in America, or there's a larger denominational body over the Methodist Church or over the Presbyterian Church, who oversees a lot of how pastors are kept in their mm-hmm. calls. And
right.
one of the things that it does is help that transition process. So, that, you know, Patrick, as you were describing, like, churches just don't know what to do when that founding pastor leaves. Like, we have a synod staff. Who, when your church doesn't know what to do when your pastor's going to mm-hmm. leave, even if they've been there for 30 years, they come in and they yeah. walk you through this mm-hmm. process and they say, this is what's going to happen, and we're going to help make this transition happen for you. You're not mm-hmm. just left to flounder. Mm-hmm. And, you know, different pieties have taken this in different directions. Like, the United Methodists have complete control over when pastors stay and go. From the larger body has the complete authority over which pastors stay and go in a particular mm-hmm. context. Mm-hmm. And so in that context, like, you might see a pastor who's, you know, kind of should be retiring but isn't yet retiring, or who's just ineffective after 2 or 3 years, and they'll just move him on to somewhere else, or move her yeah. on to somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that won't happen the same way in the Lutheran Church. We have other different other practices and things there,
sure.
but there's advantages to that for sure.
I think too, a way more, I guess, a liturgical church can survive these kind of turmoils
yeah.
is the in worship. The highlight, what we're pointing towards, is communion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's
mm-hmm.
the big celebration that's going on. That's
mm-hmm.
why we're gathered together, is ultimately for the sacrament to be there, word and sacrament to be present.
Right.
And for some mega churches, the highlight is going to be the sermon.
Right.
Like, that's
for
why
sure.
we're here, is to hear this guy
mm-hmm.
or woman speak mm-hmm. eloquently and beautifully about the Bible and give
mm-hmm.
insight into my life. And so that's why I'm in the room, is for that person's wisdom,
mm-hmm.
and that wisdom is removed from the room, it's easier for me to go along with it.
Right.
But if I'm in the room, not for one individual's wisdom, but for the community or for sacrament, it's easy to say, that's why I'm here.
Right.
Right.
And I'm not as dependent. And that's probably why there's not a ton of, like, Lutheran sermon podcasters that have broken into the
mm-hmm.
the more mainstream Christianity
right.
mm-hmm.
that are these celebrity pastors, because that's not how we're structuring the way we
right.
do worship.
Yeah.
And so I think how this happens is sometimes as a culture and even as a church, we are prioritizing, like, success and effectiveness over maybe, like, the fruits of the Spirit. Like, what matters most sometimes for the pastors, are they successful? Are they eloquent? Are they effective in their job? And less matters, are they loving and patient
mm-hmm.
and kind and gentle
mm-hmm.
and self-controlled? Those things take a back seat
mm-hmm.
yeah.
to these things that our culture elevates. So I think this is a cultural response,
mm-hmm.
not a Christian response, coming from the desire for celebrity. And so I think this does leave us in this place, because if a celebrity falls in our culture and does something wrong, we get to judge them and look at internet gossip. But what happens when a pastor falls
mm-hmm.
from these things
mm-hmm.
is typically when church bodies are decimated, because
mm-hmm.
it's not just I trusted this person to entertain me, it's I trusted this person with my faith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be a dangerous place to be.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, and too, I mean, I think that celebrity pastors run the danger that comes with celebrity,
mm-hmm.
right? And that danger includes, you know, putting, as you mentioned before, putting the brand above
yeah.
the call of the gospel. And so there are a lot of celebrity pastors that I think have kind of made it by avoiding some of the real challenging parts of scripture and of faith and
yeah.
Clinging to what we would call a prosperity gospel, essentially. You know, a boiled down version of this would be, if you pray, and then God will give you everything you want.
Sure.
Right? And they have enough people who are fairly well off who kind of say, oh yeah, I prayed and I got this
mm-hmm.
thing, that they can run with that and they
mm-hmm.
can tell that story over
mm-hmm.
and over, and people will jump on that. But I think that misses a lot of the depth.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what Joel Osteen's pattern is for Easter or for you know, any of the kind of what we'd call the high holy celebrations. But I have never heard of them having like a Good Friday service.
Sure.
Where they're, you know, coming together to think about the brokenness of humanity. Mm-hmm. We're kind of jumping straight to resurrection without taking any time to think about crucifixion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think all these things can be present there. I think it comes from a place of, what do you desire most in your biblical leaders? Effectiveness or kindness? And love.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying those things can be mutually exclusive.
Yeah, for sure.
But if because they're effective, it's okay for them not to be as kind and loving, I think you're going to find yourself in a bad place.
Yeah. Right.
And also don't confuse, because they're effective, that means they are kind and loving.
Right.
Like, yeah. I think that's sure. That's the danger there. So hopefully big churches can still be really big, have great influence in their communities, cultures around them,
yeah.
but they're organizing their systems in ways that protect their congregants and not protect the brand.
Yes.
Nice.
All right, that brings us to the end of our potluck.
Yeah, that was... So I don't know about brownie, but I'd say a solid piece of angel food cake with some strawberries on top. That's okay. A very nice dessert.
Fine-dining for you there.
I'll add whipped cream, too.
Well, sure.
Okay, they brought out a can of Ready Whip.
Yeah, somebody really went to town. That was very kind of that person.
Okay,
yeah.
There you go. So hopefully we had a good time. Hopefully our listeners enjoyed our a new, not necessarily format, but a new podcast structure that we may play around with in the coming weeks. We may bring a potluck back.
Yeah.
We may not.
Yeah.
But hopefully you liked it.
Let us know.
I always like potlucks.
Yeah. Because I get to eat.
Right. Because there's food. So
and I usually don't bring anything because I'm a bad person.
Because Patrick eats for free.
Yes.
Hey, so I've got a recommendation for us today.
It is recommendation time. So that's good.
So hey, I have been rereading something recently, and I'm going to commend it to our listeners because it comes with a movie assignment as well. So it's a little two-parter. The book that I've been rereading is Hero with a Thousand Faces by Joseph Campbell, in which he...
That's a good one.
Yeah, it is fun. It's a little heady, to say the least, but it's...
And probably a little dated, too.
But if you can slog through it a little bit, it's got some really good stuff, kind of talking about the hero's journey and how do we experience the hero's journey throughout histories and across cultures, and how does that connect to Christianity and Jesus, and how does it connect to other modern day hero stories. And to connect with that, I commend to your watching the original Star Wars episodes 4, 5, and 6.
Those are good ones.
Those are very good ones. And Joseph Campbell does some writing about how at the time, and again, this is dated a little bit, but at the time he was writing this, he was of the belief that Star Wars would become the great myth of our generation.
He's probably not wrong.
I think there are elements of that are true. It maybe did not grab hold in the way that he would initially describe it, but it's definitely a cultural phenomenon that has pervaded. And so I would commend watching episodes 4, 5, and 6 of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Episodes 7 and 8 are both fine. I like them well enough. Rogue One was solid. It was a good one.
Yeah.
Episodes 1, 2, and 3, please don't ever bother.
Not a fan.
Pretend like they didn't exist.
Some kids like them, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your kid likes them. Shane likes them, yeah. I'm with you. It's just not the same.
It's not. So just don't go by.
Well, I think the hero's journey is a really interesting concept.
Yeah.
When I actually worked at summer camp, one of the things I would do with my staff during training is work through
send them on a hero's journey.
Well, I would say our kids are coming on a hero's journey.
Oh.
When a kid comes to summer camp, it's here to be a hero's journey. We would trace that kind of the same patterns and themes that most heroes in film or literature go through. Our kids are going to experience the same patterns and themes through a week of summer camp. And how can what are the pitfalls? How can someone's camp experience go bad?
Right.
It's sometimes by making those themes and journeys not quite the same. Mm. And so I think it's fascinating.
Yeah. We might have to talk about the hero's journey another time.
Sounds good. Maybe in our next potluck.
Maybe.
Well, how can you find us?
Hey, if you want more information about Beyond Sunday, you can check out our website, www.beyondsundaypodcast.com. And of course, you can find us on Facebook at Beyond Sunday Podcast.
All right. Thank you for listening.
Yes. See you? Nope, we won't hear you or see you.
Okay.
We might do one of those.
But we will come to you again next week.
Send us an audio file.
A video.
Oh, yeah.
Snap? Should we have a Snapchat?
Ooh, let us know if you liked the format.
The format.
Yeah. All right.
It's time to go.
Yeah. Bye, everyone.